Blog Talk Radio.
Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to Barling and Barrett on Crime. I am Simon Barrett, and my co-host is Manny Barling. Manny, good to talk to you again.
Hey, great to be here.
Hey, this is completely off topic, but do you recall me asking you about a stunt man by the name of Jack Young?
Yes, I sure do.
I talked to him yesterday. He's 85 years old, and he's just hell on wheels. I dread to think what he was like 50 years ago.
Well, you know, stuntmen are a rare breed in Hollywood. I mean, they also seem to outlive everybody. That's really wild, too.
Oh, yeah, but I mean, I asked him how many bones he'd broken over the years, and he said, well, about 60%.
Yeah, that's about right.
Oh, and Manny, I have to warn you, we're joined today by a couple of great troublemakers. From Orlando, Florida, we have journalist Dave Neckel. Dave, hello again.
Hello. Hiya. How you doing?
And from Fort Lauderdale, Florida, we have investigator, bail bondsman, and gunslinger, William Cobra Storbs. Cobra, hello.
Hey, brother man. How are you? I did a radio shot with old friend TJ Hart, and when I went on live, I said, hey, Simon, great to be on your show. So maybe I should say, hey, TJ, great to be on the show.
Lock up the women and children. Cobra's here.
No, right. I don't mess with women and children. But you've got another. You might want to watch out.
And the original plan was to have Jan join us today. She has opted out, and I won't go into details, but today is the 30th anniversary of something very sad that happened in her life. So she sends her apologies. Just
send back our condolences.
Yeah, not in the mood for her dealing with us roustabouts. Manny, you've been a trial lawyer for, what, 37 years, something like that?
Yeah, longer than I'd like to remember.
Right. The Casey Anthony story, it just never seems to go away. Is this common in your experience? You have a criminal trial, and it just, you know, the aftermath far exceeds the actual trial.
Well, I think it's a gift that keeps on giving, frankly. I mean, for people in the industry to have something go on as long as this and hold the public's attention is relatively rare. So I think for most people in media, and of course Dave can tell me his feelings, this has turned into a cottage industry for them. And if you go back to the Loeb Leopold killings, which is the subject of the movie Compulsion, in the Roaring Twenties with the two heirs to the Sears fortune, the cousins murdering another cousin, and that held the news until the final one died in prison some years later in my youth, okay? So here they were of a crime in 1925, and in my youth they were still talking about it until the guy passed away in prison. So there's a long history of this.
You mentioned Dave's name, so let's ask him the question. I mean, do you still feel that the story has any validity, or should it just be allowed to go away?
Well, personally, it would be nice if it went away, but I don't think it will. 100-some years ago, Lizzie Borden took an axe and gave her mother 40 whacks. When she saw what she had done, she gave her father 41. Now, I didn't just make that up, but you still hear that today, over 100 years later.
Uh-huh.
So I think that Casey will always be remembered for what she allegedly did. I say allegedly now because I don't need any lawsuits. But I did write a ballad about Casey if you want to hear it.
Sure.
Sure.
Except I have to interject a quick story. I don't think it's a secret. My wife, Ashley, is an actress. And I jokingly had a deal with her when we got married that she could never play Lizzie Borden because she really gets into her roles, and I didn't want to wake up and have my wife doing Lizzie Borden over me.
That's the way I feel about Casey.
That's good. So tell us my story.
The ballad is just the ballad of Casey, and I wrote, for the rest of her life, her name will be Mud, for taking the life of her own flesh and blood. For what lies ahead is a brewing storm. Her daughter, now dead, was fit chloroform.
Very good.
Okay, so are you up for the next Poet Laureate post?
I don't think so. I don't think so. I think that's just a... I just hope that maybe one day it's read like 100 years from now. I don't care if anybody knows who wrote it. That's not the point. It's that, I mean, who wrote the ballad of Lizzie Borden? You know,
that's a good question.
It's just that it lasted a lot. It's still around.
Yeah.
Okay. Cobra, I have to ask you the same question, although I know that your interests lay in slightly different areas. Do you think that the Casey story is done, over, and we should just all move on with our lives?
Heck no. It's not going to be over in your lifetime or even my lifetime. There's too many loose strings, so to speak. There's too many other pieces out there that are still waiting. You have the good friend of mine, Timmy Miller, with EchoSearch. You've got Padilla. You've got Kronk. You've got Baez. You've got Mr. Grun, my client. You got me. You got a whole bunch of people coming out. And the newest thing that I heard a couple days ago, and I heard it on a very good from a very good source, I don't know. I got some friends over at ABC. I did put a call into ABC World News to find out if they had a solid offer on the table of $1 million, up $500,000 from the last offer that everybody claims to not have had. But like we were saying before we went live, I think the only way that she would actually make money at this stage, because she missed her window of opportunity, I do believe, but the only way she would actually make money is if she said, all right, I'm going to tell you what really happened. And if it opens up with the trunk and the baby in the trunk and all the stuff, I think, yeah, it would definitely be a ball buster. And, you know, other than that, I think that the main saga of Casey kind of is going to slide to the side just a little bit, and some of these other folks are going to step forward with their various litigation cases and so forth and so on. But I still say that, and I'll let your listeners fill in the blank, I think members of the family up into, including Casey, should be charged with conspiracy to commit fill in the blank. Each one has a special blank filling of its own, but you can't double jeopardy anybody, and apparently the feds are not going to move and do any violation of civil rights, but there's still charges that could be brought even against Casey, especially with those two leading words, conspiracy to commit, and put in something in there. I don't care what you do, just do it.
Okay, Manny, you've been around the legal block more than a couple of times. Does what Cobra is saying make any does it have legs?
I thought you were going to say to me, does Cobra make sense to me? And then I was worried that you were going to make me answer that. You know, I agree with Cobra, except for, you know, basically life is generated by the general public. As long as they're interested and they want to read something, they're going to pursue it. You know, and it's funny because one of our listeners described themselves as mothers with pitchforks. And I think there's a strong movement, and God knows Jan is at the forefront of this movement, is that they will not forgive or forget the loss of a child. And as a result, she will be continue to be tried in the court of public opinion until someone comes up with an answer. The direct analogy we all know is O.J. Simpson. Yeah. The bottom line is, because there was such an unsatisfactory result and it involved the killing of someone's wife, which is a very emotional and passionate crime, it still basically jumps around the news. And whenever Simpson's released from prison, everybody will comment and they'll line up and they'll start on him again. If he thinks this is over, it's just on pause. So I think that's a bigger issue for people to look at. It's not us. It's what motivates people from, we'll start, for example, the French Revolution. You know, as French citizens just love lining up and watching royalty have their heads cut off. So there's a certain amount of stored up anxiety and anger in our country that manifests with this. So to some extent, she's bearing the brunt of everything else going on in the country. So does anyone feel any differently about that?
Well, I you know, when I was a kid, I used to watch a farmer cut chicken's heads off. But I think about O.J. I think O.J. was famous to begin with, so that probably has something to do with it. But I think you're right, and the bottom line is there's been no closure. You know, somebody then killed what's her name, Brown, and her friend. Same thing with Kaylee. Somebody killed Kaylee. And everything points to the people that, to the two people that got off those crimes.
Yeah.
So it's closure, I think. There is no closure.
I think,
agree.
Simon, it goes back to your question that on this piece that announcing this show, did justice just move out of the way? Did something happen? I mean, you know, it's been quoted from me back and forth about Jeff Ashton, and I like the guy. He's a likable guy. I'm sure, you know, he probably would say I like Cobra, but here's the problem I have. I still say, if, and this is my opinion, I don't know at what point in time, but the story that was written that said, you know, about the book and everything, you just don't kick out 140,000 words and 205 pages and all that garbage over a weekend. So, and mm-hmm. you get everything up and running with everything that was going on. I just think that if, you know, like Manny's an attorney, if you're focused on, you know, doing something, whether it's prosecuting a person or if it's defending a person, I think that that time is best spent preparing that case and not trying to make things look. I think what we did in this case is we hit way too many experts. We brought in cutting edge technologies that people weren't ready for. We overcharged it. We sensationalized it. And I have to go back and question the person who was doing all this business and check their motivation behind it. And I think that's where we missed it. I don't think that the Lady Justice failed us at all. I think that, you know, we're the certain people that had their hands in the damn pot didn't do it properly. And I think they had misguided intentions or other guiding factors or something. And I'm saying that in the nicest possible way, giving Mr. Ashton every benefit of the doubt, but damn it, the system let somebody down. And this
at this point, I do want to interject that the people that accused me of calling Ashton a loser are incorrect. It was Manny that said it, and I actually agree with Manny, but.
Well, you know,
he's pretty smart, though. He's trying to get his boss's job now, and anybody that's in the Orlando area that actually vote for Jeff Ashton has got to have both screws loose, because I can only see him writing a secondary book about some nonsensical crap. I think if you're a prosecutor...
Let me respond to some of that, Cobra. We can't let this slip by. I said he was a loser because he lost the case. And he's acting like he won the case, and he didn't win the case. And it galls me as a lawyer, because it really galled me with the O.J. Simpson team, who I thought did one of the worst jobs trying a case I've ever seen in my life, to go around trying to tell everybody how great they were when all of us knew the truth, that they had screwed the case up. And so Ashton, and by the way, speaking as an author, I can tell you that I had to stop practicing law to finish my books. So if this guy can do that and write that many pages and practice law and do all the rest, he gets a lot of respect from me, because few other people I've ever known were capable of doing that. And Simon, who reviews a great many books, will agree with me that that is one of the toughest things you can do. So, Simon, do you believe he could write that book independent of this trial without it affecting him? I don't.
Come on.
No, not at all.
Here's the thing. Taxpayer money paid for this trial. Taxpayer money paid his salary. Taxpayer money wrote that book. And I'm sorry, but that's it.
I'm not arguing with you at all, Cobra. I agree with you. And it does bother me when I see all of these guys, you know, clunking out books, especially after they got their butts kicked in a case like this. And he just didn't lose. He looked foolish. And for all the reasons you said, I thought he put on a poor case. The only reason I thought she would be convicted is there was so much public sentiment that I thought that it would just blind the jury and they would convict her, because they just felt so strongly she was guilty, they wouldn't look at the evidence. But based upon what was put on by the, you know, by Ashton, I found it hard. I agree with your comments. Remember your last comments, Cobra, before the jury came out? No cause of death, you know, no time of death, and all they did is spend all their time trying to make her look like a bad person. So to fuel the fire in the public, Cobra, they've made her look like a horrible person, so now she's also being tried for being a horrible person.
Oh, okay, I do want to point something out, because I'm getting beaten senseless at this end. Jeff Ashton was not the lead prosecutor. That was actually Linda Drane Burdick. The problem was that Linda, bless her little cotton socks, has the presence of black mold in the courtroom. So it was, you know, it was Ashton that basically took a lot of the juicy stuff. And also, it wasn't Ashton or Linda Drane Burdick that opted for the going for the death penalty. That was Louis Lamar,
right,
or whatever his name is.
Right.
I think he's a famous author.
Right.
he writes westerns.
Louis would love it.
Oh, God. Well, whatever the case may be, it shows, you know, and the thing of it is I'm not supporting of the other side either. In fact, my bone is, everybody knows with Ashton, is to, hey, you concentrate on the job we paid you to do, pal, and do that. And then later on in life, you want to write a book, fine and dandy. Don't do it on our taxpayer dime. That's number one. Number two, I'm upset with Baez, because I want to know at what point in time did he decide that he was going to go with the accidental drowning defense, because
about
he needed time.
Prior to the trial.
He needed time. He needed time to prepare for that. He needed time to get all those ducks in a row. But when did he really, really, really converse with his client to decide to come up with that crazy ass idea? And that's
about
the day I'm looking
for the trial.
Well, if you could narrow it down to the exact day, because
prosecution.
Here's why I need to know, Dave. I need to know an exact day, because on that exact day, on the very next day, if he continued to try to focus this on Jesse Grun, then not only do you have some misconduct as an attorney, but, you know, it is hideous, but you may have criminal actions there. This may be why I also have on good authority.
That's something that I think
for
that
the
I wanted to ask.
Dave,
yes.
Hold your phone for a second. That's why I have it on good authority that the grand jury has taken a second yet harder look at three of these charges that have been accused against him. And if any of them kick, number one, like I said on that last show that Mandy just quoted from, not only will he be disbarred, which I would love to see, he may be jailed. And the thing of it is I've got a bone to pick with both of them. I think justice failed the American people, and there's a little child that lost her life over this bullshit. Now, you go ahead and say what you need to say there, Dave, but I got that off my crawl.
The only thing, I mean, am I wrong, but didn't Jesse Grund sue the National Enquirer?
No, you're wrong.
I thought that he is suing because they posted information about him being a part of this satanic cult.
Dave, you're a million miles from Mars, all right? It's not Jesse, it's Richard Grund.
Oh, what did I say, Jesse? I meant Richard Grund.
Yeah. Shit.
Sorry.
Get your facts straight. That's why I said wrong. I was going to correct you, but
okay.
I figured I'd let you
right
out there.
But, you know, Manny probably would be able to answer this. If a client tells, and I don't know, you can't legitimately find out what she said to Baez behind closed doors. That's that client attorney privilege. And if Baez comes out and says, this is what happened, and that's what my client said. I mean, can you really legally go after that attorney?
Well,
beautiful
first of all,
that you said that.
Wait a minute, Cobra.
Okay.
First of all, he really can't discuss anything that's said. And in light of what's going on and the threats made to him of potential prosecution, why would he say anything? So at the end of the day, no one's really going to know what he said. And certainly a grand jury and no one else has the power to invade that privacy. And we're never going to know what was said.
Correct. Also, on that same venue, at the sheriff's office, when all of a sudden we believe, and of course we've talked about this before, that possibility that Crunk's girlfriend, the deputy sheriff female, one each, worked there at the deputy after sheriff's office is the rumor mill that we've all heard. We also heard that possibly Lee and Casey went on a gambling trip to nowhere, accompanied by on the same ship Crunk and his girlfriend. Now, the question comes down to this. When they were in there, attorney-client privilege and speaking to each other, were they doing it in such a manner that it would be overheard by this female deputy? Did she have her ear to the door? Did they do it purposely or accidentally? And could this be part of the reason that some of the things that we know for a fact, the investigators that worked this case, it did not come out in trial, it did not come out anywhere, because had that attorney-client privilege been broken by the police, this whole damn case would have floated out to sea because of that. Right, Manny?
Absolutely.
There you go.
Absolutely.
And that's all I can tell you on that, because that attorney who represents Mr. Grund is also my general counsel, and he's sometimes referred to as the old construction lawyer. But he's a very smart individual because he has got these people on the ropes.
Well, you know, you probably did you hear my comments about that last week, Cobra?
What about?
About
construction
about
attorney?
Yeah. Did you hear what I said? You know?
What'd you say?
Well, I said when it comes to such subjects as defamation, despite the fact that everybody makes this big deal about it, I could teach any of you to be a specialist in the area probably in about 2 weeks. And that's one of the ideas when they say, oh, he's just this or that. Well, I could say Jeff Ashton's just a criminal lawyer with a one-dimensional view of life, because most guys who go to law school decide to go to the prosecutor's office, don't bother to study much of anything else, and they struggle as law students. And you know that old line about those that can do and those that can't teach? Well, that's
right.
How we feel about prosecutors. The lowest end of our law school classes become prosecutors.
Right.
Okay,
well,
it's definitely time to bring Dave back into the conversation, because I'm sure he's jumping at the bit. He's of a big fan of Jeff Ashton.
Why didn't you get him disbarred? Shit. Or get him to recuse himself. Come on, man.
Well, let me say this. I mean, I like Jeff Ashton as a person. He was very good to me.
He's nice.
He even spelled my name right in his book. How can I complain about that?
Well, yeah,
no, he's
we'll,
a nice guy,
we'll give you a definite special release on this one, because anyone who gets your name right is definitely a good guy.
Yeah, that's a good guy.
Well, the thing is, I think that, I'll readily admit that he dedicated the book to Kaylee. But there's a lot of people out there who looked at Kathy Bellich as a savior because she fought for Kaylee. But, in fact, she fought for her TV station. She fought for ratings. She fought for advertising revenue. Okay?
That was her job, brother.
That's
her job. In fairness to her now, Dave, that's her job.
There's a misconception about, these people that were involved in this case. If you were somehow, involved in the defense of Casey, then you were certainly like you came from Satan's bowels. You know what I mean? You had to have come from the lowest intestinal gases of Satan. And that's not really true. I mean, these people have jobs to do, and so did Jeff Ashton. He's only a human being, okay? And I think that when he sat in the courtroom and shook his head and made funny faces and huffed and puffed, that was not showing professionalism. But I will say, as a person, I really like him, yes. And I think he had an illustrious career, for crying out loud. You know, this was not his first time that he went to the dance floor. And
he studied for this test.
And
he would have passed it, by God.
What's the problem? Here's what a problem is. The next week is the Super Bowl, okay? The losing team is going to end up being the worst damn football team in the NFL, when in fact is second from the best. So here's all the stuff that Jeff Ashton did, and because he loses this case, he becomes the worst prosecutor the world's ever seen. And there's just something wrong there, inherently wrong with that kind of a thought. Yeah,
if you don't practice for the Super Bowl, you deserve to lose the Super Bowl. So if you're sitting around eating munchies and you wait until game day to go throw that ball, you deserve to lose. If you're sitting around writing a book and concentrating on all these, cute little one-liners in this book, and you're not putting on the dadgum, prosecution for this case, you deserve to lose the case.
He said that he didn't write that book. Do you have any factual information that you're
I don't
care what you're just saying. If you're going to make a statement like that, and
I'm
going to
make
this statement that he didn't work on the book.
I'm going to make this statement to you. Unless I'm proven wrong, it is virtually humanly impossible, one, to get somebody interested in the book, two, to get somebody on the page, three, to negotiate a contract price, four, to get that book out in front of everybody else, five, to write that many words and that many pages and do all that. You just heard from a panel expert there sitting beside you, Mr. Manny, that he had to quit his law practice to do it. Well, he quit prosecuting the case to do it. That's my opinion. I'm entitled to it, and you can defend the man all you want. But the proof is he lost the case, and now he's trying to take over his boss's job. I say hell no.
You know, I'm enjoying this so much, I'm not sure I want to participate, but I have to say a couple things on behalf of Jeff Ashton. First of all, as a lawyer, you are like a football team. You're as good as your last victory, because that person you win or lose from thinks that's the only case in your entire life, and so to them, it is the only game in town. So that's a really big issue. And I don't care whether he wrote the book or not. He put his name on the book. Therefore, he had to participate in the book, and that required a tremendous amount of effort. I wrote a note to a famous sports writer who I've been communicating with for years and years because he mentioned to me that I'd missed something. And I said to him, you know, I've been so busy writing our last book, The Food Revolution Papers, I missed that event. And he sent me a note saying, writing's a bitch, isn't it? And it really is. And it is one of the toughest things I've ever done in my life. And you have to look at it. And by the way, how does it compare to practicing law? Writing a book is far tougher than practicing law, okay? Now, that probably shocks you, but it is, because it's much more demanding. But the fact is, he was a very successful lawyer, and he is still a very successful lawyer. But no matter what he says or does, he is responsible for this case, and if it didn't go well, he was the one who went front and center. He was the one who was the face of the case, and he's the one who's going to receive the most criticism, deservedly or not, because that is the way our system works.
I just say it's a broken focus, Manny. I don't care if he wrote the book in his sleep and worked on the prosecution while he was awake.
And I
don't
agree
care.
With you.
But the thing is, it breaks your focus, man. And if your focus is broken, whether he signed the deal then, wrote the book then, did it in 45 seconds after it, the thought entered his mind prior to the conviction. The thought of writing a book entered his mind, and I believe that broke his focus. That's what I believe.
You're not gonna get any argument from me. As I said, I know how difficult that is, and I just don't understand how he could possibly do it based upon my own personal experiences. I was really stunned at the amount of time it took me to write, edit, and get things done with the book over and over and over again, the countless emails from the editors and the publishers. I mean, it's a chore, and every author, whether one person reads his book or 100 people read his book, should be admired for the time and effort it took him to get that book where it is. So, yeah, it's really a tough thing to do.
Okay, in practical terms, you know, let's talk books just for 30 seconds.
Oh, we got your attention now with books?
You always have my attention. Your last book, The Food Revolution Papers, was essentially, 60% written, because it was articles that you'd already published. But right. It still took, what, 4 months?
At least, yeah. I mean, you know, to get them, you know, you could have a book completely written on anything from toilet paper to God knows what. But getting that book from that stage to the next stage, which is printable and a printable form, is extremely difficult. So that phase of it alone was extremely difficult. So it doesn't matter sometimes. It really doesn't.
I do believe that Manny is telling lies. I think it was a lot longer than 4 months. I know, because I lived through it.
Did it really seem that much longer, Simon? Maybe I should go back and look at it. Maybe I'm in denial that I suffered for that long.
Right.
You know, and by the way, it's taken me a while to laugh at it, because, I mean, Ash and I were so exhausted after writing this book. You know, I took about 3 weeks off, and if you remember, I didn't even write an article, publish an article for several weeks afterwards.
Right. But, I mean, the point is, even though most of the material was already floating around, it's still an enormous amount of effort to get a book in print. And yet... Ashton did it in record time. I mean, I'm not sure that the folks at Guinness have a record for book publishing, but Jeff Ashton is definitely right up there.
Oh, yeah.
So, you know, where did the time go? You know, was he, you know, pinching an hour here, an hour there, while he was in trial?
Mm. Well, he had to be. Mm. He had to be. There's just no other way to do the book. And again, that's okay if you win. If he won, everybody could laud him for his tremendous achievement of writing a book while he was in one hand while he was winning a case with the other. You know, to the victors go the spoils. But he didn't win. He left this. He left everybody high and dry. And since he was the focal point of this particular case, he's going to get the focal point of everybody's complaints. And someone did correct me on my post about how this case came to fruition in terms of the election to do the death penalty. But, you know, that's sort of a coward's thing. If the guy who made that decision wasn't the guy trying the case and wasn't participating in the day-to-day case, then shame on him, because he left basically Jeff Ash and everyone else out there high and dry.
Do you think that we could find somebody from this panel or elsewhere that would be willing to haul Jeff into court for writing the book during the trial?
I mean, haul him into court. How would you haul him into court?
I don't know. So what are we supposed to do with him?
We'll let you make him some barbecue, man. How about that? You make him a hot toddy tonight when he goes to sleep, all right?
Let's take some abuse from the phone lines.
Oh, God.
We all need a little abuse.
Okay. We have hopefully, someone from the 520 area code. What's your name and what's your question for us?
My name is Dee. And I have a question. I have two questions. I mean, I understand, you know, speeding up Ashton over his book and whatnot. But, you know, I mean, whatever he did on his own time, I believe it's, you know, pretty fair. He's entitled to that. But he brought up some pretty interesting points in his book, you know, just like how dirty, you know, the other side was really being, you know. But what would you have done different? What would you have done different? I mean, that's my question. I mean, you know, there's duct tape over the child's mouth. There's a bag. How are you going to how would you have showed this case different?
Well, first of all, you know, the...
it's circumstantial, I guess, because that's what I was wondering.
You know, by the way, when you work for the government or anyone else, and even for your own client, you are really pledging your time to that cause. And if you're writing a book on your own time and you're doing this kind of work, your supervisor, particularly in a DA's office, would tell you don't do it. You have a job. So believe it or not, there are different restraints on and constraints on lawyers in this position. And I understand what he did. I've written more than my share of this stuff. But if you're going to do it, you better win, because you're going to be subject to criticism. And no one's criticizing Jeff for any case other than the outcome of this case. So Jeff Ash, and you know, you can't say his career is bad. He was a very good lawyer and still is a good lawyer and has achieved a great deal in life. He just didn't win this case. First of all, they relied too heavily. Back to your answer question. They relied too heavily on what I call bad character evidence, which I consider a danger to do with somebody, because sooner or later, you know, everybody in life has had their ups and downs. And sooner or later, people start to resent it, and it doesn't last. So they spent the first week or so of the trial basically defaming her. And in the long run, I thought that hurt their case. And what they should have done is opened up and just been honest with the jury. We have a rare case. We're asking you to convict somebody where we don't have the time of death or the actual part of death. And guess what? You're going to have to pay attention and think of all the other reasons why she may have possibly been the murderer of this child, blah, 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 blah. But instead, they sort of treated it like it didn't exist and hoping that nobody would notice. And usually what you're taught in law school is to take the biggest weakness in your case and not only get it out there, but just say it over and over and over and over until people lose interest and listen to it. They didn't follow that classic law school advice. And I thought that hurt them a great deal in how they presented the case. So I think, to me, that's the first major flaw they had in their case. And I could go on with others, but I don't want to hog up a whole show, because I could do a whole show on what I watched it every day. And sometimes I would laugh about it, because you look at – don't you remember watching trial sometimes and go, well, why were they on? Or why were they on that long? Or what did they really have to say? And if you're saying that about a case, which I said very often, then the case is not moving in the direction it should. Did you have that feeling when you watched it at times?
No, the whole time I watched it, I thought Ashton and Linda Burdick did a very awesome job, and I thought it was right on the money. I mean, I don't understand, you know, how the jury came to the conclusion they even came to. I watched the trial from day one, all the way to the end.
Okay, but you have to also bear in mind that you watched it, and more than likely you also watched the HLN and CNN coverage, very probably poked around online. You were privy to a huge amount of information that the jury were not. All those people had to work on was what they were told. And I'm still in shock and awe that you could find 12 people that had never heard about Casey Anthony. But,
mm-hmm.
you know, that's,
right.
That's a different story.
Yeah.
And that's the complaint, by the way, about trial in the press, is because people sit home and they listen to Nancy Grace, they listen to this or that, so their opinion is the sum total of what they hear from every outlet, and they just can't shut it off. And therein lies one of the problems, and you experienced a little of that yourself, is you saw so many viewpoints over a period of time.
Oh, absolutely. I watched the trial. I talked to people, people involved with the trial, and so did you, Dave. I mean,
yeah.
Was it difficult to be objective, because you're sat in the courtroom and you're listening to the testimony? Can you remove yourself from that, or merely focus
well,
on that and ignore?
One of the pluses was the fact that I could watch the jury during all this testimony, and we would discuss it amongst ourselves in the media room. We had a room where it was only open to media people. And, when we had our breaks, we'd go in there and say, well, gee, what do you think? And, well, I think the jury's looking at her like she's guilty. They were giving her bad looks, Casey. And, I mean, I saw things that, two of the male jurors would whisper to themselves almost as if they weren't paying attention to the trial. So it wasn't always like they were focused on. I didn't really see them when they didn't really lean forward with their hand on their chin, and really listen and pay attention as much as they could have, I think. So I'm going to say that that was one thing that I did get to see. It looked to me that the foreman, who the women called him eye candy, because I guess he was a good-looking guy and all, but he didn't seem to be. I mean, he seemed to be a little bit aloof,
mm-hmm.
almost as if he knew that people were looking at him as some kind of a stud muffin or something. So I had some real problems with the story to begin with.
Let me tell you, I agree. How can they not even find her guilty, not even on the child abuse, not reporting
your
child for 31 days, I mean, there's just so much wrong with that case that, there was things repeated over and over by Linda and Ashton in that case that I don't think the jury was listening at all. I mean, I think they did the best they could, and, I mean, I was pretty satisfied with their outcome. I think the defense, on the other hand, even though they won, I think he was very shady.
Well, that's probably the opinion of the defense. And probably my friend Tom Mesro represented Michael Jackson. He's the only one who seems to get away without that criticism. But first of all, you know, I've looked at juries. You walk out and much as Dave's describing, you spend all this time going, well, what do they mean by that? And you know, you come up with a million different things, and then you discuss it afterwards, and you go, well, that didn't help me at all, because you don't know what they're thinking. And most jurors are warned in the back room, and there's a discussion about it, that be careful. Everybody's going to be staring at you. They're looking for a clue. They want to see if you're going to give away what they're going to do. So a lot of them, you know, go through the door knowing they have to be extremely cautious, because if they cough the wrong way, someone's going to interpret that with some mystical meaning about what their, you know, their position is. So I think that's part of it.
Dee, I want to thank you for your call, but
you.
I need to take another call.
Thank you.
Again, thank
it's
you
a pleasure,
for calling.
Dee.
Thank you.
Okay, we have a caller coming in from the 512 area code. What's your name and what's your question for us?
Hi, Simon. This is Kathy. I was out at the memorial yesterday, and I have a website, victimsheartland.com, where I have pictures of it, but it's on the members only because I'm on the video. The gentleman who built the cross, his name is Wally. His wife's name is Janine. It was very surreal. I went out there yesterday by myself. I've never been there before. I used to live here, and I moved to Corpus Christi, and I'm just here visiting, and I drove up to Orlando from Cocoa Beach. And I'm standing there by myself, and, you know, within a minute, there's a couple there, and they're asking me if I'm okay, blah, blah, blah. And he says to me, it's amazing that you're here, because this morning, that cross that I built was gone. Somebody stole it. And he said, I have a Facebook account, and if you go on that Facebook account, you will see pictures of us retrieving the cross and putting it back this morning. He said, bring kids home is taking the cross for whatever reasons, and I'm not sure if they have anything to do with the Anthonys or not. I try not to get into the political aspect of it. But anyway, I videoed him talking about the cross and everything, and then he just called me an hour ago and said the cross is completely gone again.
You know what I was told was that the cross, somebody came in and removed the cross, and it wasn't bringing him kids home. It wasn't that Eddie Del Val or whatever. He said that somebody came in and took the cross. So now, what the story is for real, I don't know, but this was a couple of weeks ago.
But this is recent.
It was the person, once they said they wanted to clean that out, which I understand why they don't want to have stuffed animals in there, because it attracts
mold, they had taken
mold,
if I'm sorry to interrupt you, Dave, there were no stuffed animals out there. Yeah, there were no stuffed animals out there at all.
Mold
if you look at the videos that I have, there are no stuffed animals at all. They took those animals out because they were just, you know, rain-logged and bugs and all that.
Oh, they're terrible. I put a series of photographs I took out one day when Eddie was cleaning the place up, and his wife told me that I said there's snakes and rats and snakes in here, and she said and spiders. And he made a fist, and he said she won't get out of the van because she saw a spider the size of my fist, and he made a fist. And so, you know, it's not a safe place to put that kind of stuff. I mean, I put pictures of teddy bears or stuffed animals. That some of these things are like those $50 huge little, you know, huge stuffed animals with the filler pulled out because animals want to tear that out to make their beds. They want to go in there and so, you know, it's just not safe for man. It's not fit for man or beast. And if you keep that stuff there, any kids that walk back and forth, they're going to probably be half tempted to go over there to see what they can snatch.
But my point is that
they just want to go over there and say, oh, look at the nice stuffed animals. And what happens is they're open to
constrictor comes out of it.
But there were no stuffed animals. My point is, I'm trying to say, is when I was there yesterday, there were no stuffed animals. There was just a beautiful cross with flowers and then rocks where her little skull was found that have inscriptions on it. And that is, there was no stuffed animals. I mean, there's one little tiny one hanging from the cross, just a tiny one, but there's none on the ground at all. I have pictures and video of it. And I have his website, his Facebook website, that shows the, somebody, you know, them retrieving the cross yesterday morning, getting it back because somebody stole it. And, I mean, it's just unreal, and I know it's a lot to take in. I'm still trying to take it in.
I'm obviously coming from a position of weakness here. Is this the site where there was going to be a proposed memorial put up, and everyone said, no, let's not do that?
No, this is not that I know of. I'm not 100% sure on that, but the Facebook is Little Angel Kaylee Marie. And if you go on that Facebook and you click on those pictures, you will see them yesterday morning retrieving back that cross. If you go, and I'm not trying to get business on my website, honestly, I'm just letting you know that I have it in members only on victimsheartland.com. If you go on Victims Heartland and you go into members only, I go up and wrap it up, and it says Rep's visit to the Kaylee Memorial yesterday, and I've got video on there and I've got pictures. Now it's gone. So I've just contacted WSTV and WESH, and they're getting out there to see what's going on. I just thought I'd let you know.
You're saying that it's been taken from your site.
No. Not from my website. The cross has been taken.
Right. Okay.
Got
it. Okay. I wasn't sure whether you meant your website when you said that.
No. I'm saying on my website, in members only, I have video when I was out there yesterday. And if you go on Wally's website, the person who built the cross, it's Little Angel Kaylee Marie. And if you click on those pictures, it will show them retrieving the cross back yesterday morning.
Okay, got it. Thank you.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, I hate to do this to you, caller, but we have to move on. But thank you so much for calling in. I want to touch on another area. Manny, you and I talked about this before, the civil suits, in particular the Texas EquiSearch versus Casey suit, and you had reservations that this could be made to stick. You know, I think what you said was something along the lines of, she can put up an argument saying, well, you know, I didn't understand the question. I was out of it. I was grieving for my daughter. Remember that conversation?
Yeah, I've heard lots of other responses, including reading Cobra's. But that doesn't stop her from making that statement, nor standing behind it, because what's the penalty for making that statement, and what's the penalty to her for standing behind it? So at the end of the day, I don't know it makes much difference because of that.
Okay.
You think lightning's going to strike her? That's everybody's general opinion in this world, and when someone makes some statement that's not perfectly true in our legal system, that somehow lightning strikes them for perjury, and perjury is probably the least prosecuted crime in the books. I know Cobra can hardly contain his laughter.
Well, I was in a deposition a couple Mondays ago, and I'll tell you what, buddy. I have never in my life, in fact, I was trying to get the attorney on the other side to remind the respondent that, hey, you're under oath, and do you understand what perjury is? And I think that people go to depositions, and they just lie, and they do what they want until the day of reckoning comes, and that's the day of court, and you go in there, and you go, oh, shit. Whoa, shit. And then all your lies are put before them, and then here's the truth side of it, and here's what you actually said, quote, unquote, or tape, untape. So, yeah, that always does bug the shit out of me. But
yeah, it does. And by the way, and that's only if a very skilled lawyer maximizes the use of that deposition in a way that allows you to prosecute them. I mean, you know,
yeah.
Please. I've seen clients and people lie consistently and just basically get away with it because when trial came, the other lawyer wasn't particularly well prepared, didn't
right.
have it together, and just basically just didn't get it done.
Right, right. I don't think that's
okay,
going to be the case here, but anyway.
I'm going to put this out to the entire team. Should we risk another phone call?
Raise your hand, Cobra.
I think we're messing with dynamite, but go for it. Pull the plug, shit.
Okay. We have a caller on the line from the 512 area code. What's your name and what's your question for us?
I'm back. I'm still listening to you. I don't need to talk anymore. I spoke my piece.
Okay. All right. We'll just go back to what we were talking about. The Texas Equisearch versus Casey. Now, Cobra, you seem to think that you might have something that rather proves that Casey was lying through her teeth. And I believe the date was October the 8th.
October 8th, 2008, sure was. Well, let me preface this by Tim Miller is a very near and dear friend of mine. We're very close, and I support everything that he does. He's a stand-up guy, and, you know, that doesn't sway with some folks, but I don't give a shit. He's been through the run mill of hell and back, and I broke bread with him, and today I've had several conversations with him. He's just a great, great guy. And he asked me to share something, a few things, with the listeners as to some things that he found, curious, not surprised. And I have the questions here that the attorney asked Casey, and these are paraphrased. These are not direct quotes. I'll get to the exact direct quote from Mr. Miller, who incidentally is not taking any TV interviews. He's not doing any radio interviews. He's flipped them all over to his attorney. He just flat won't talk to him. He told his attorney, you handle the press. I got to look for missing people and do my job. And he doesn't answer a single question that doesn't go back before his attorney counseling first to find out the proper way to ask that question. So I feel very honored that my friend would trust me enough to give two direct quotes from him and also to share part and only part of our conversation, because our conversation goes deep into investigative measures. But the three questions that were asked by Tim Miller's attorney, and I'm paraphrasing these are not exact. So if somebody gets the actual transcript, they may differ. So I didn't feel it necessary to quote these exactly. Were you aware that my client, Equisearch, was searching for your child in July? Answer, no. Were you aware that my client, Equisearch, returned in October, November, September, somewhere in there, I don't know the exact time of that, to once again search for your child? Answer, no. That's a very important question on that second go-around, and a very important answer, no. The third question, were you aware that your father, George, called 911 after Kaylee drowned in the family pool? Answer, no. Some of the scuttlebutt in the off-the-record comment was, of course not, because she didn't drown in the fucking pool. You know, that was the deal. Now, these are the direct quote that Tim asked me to share with your listener. quote, "It does not appear that Casey is going to tell the truth anytime soon." When asked of Tim Miller, did you think or hope for another response when she was asked and answered these questions? Quote, "I did not expect any other response, and I was not surprised."
Well, so, of course not. You know,
well,
you think anyone's going to change?
Let me tell you why October 8, 2008 is an important date. Casey was at home on house arrest wearing an ankle bracelet, which would track her movements if she left the house and yada, yada. Her attorney motioned the judge that please have her ankle bracelet removed. She would like to join in the search to help look for her child. Of course, the judge denied that search. Now, that request was made October 8, 2008. So at the end of October, EquiSearch was already, I mean, talks were already underway for EquiSearch to return. And you could, I can only hear her heartbeat beating, because the water had resided on Suburban Drive, and they were going to return there once again. And I'll bet you that she was flipping the hell out that her child, she knew full well, was 1,500 steps away. And here comes EquiSearch towards the end of the month. I need to get loose so I can probably hide this child a little bit better. So that's why I believe that date is important, and I thank God that the judge said no, because we probably would never have found the body had all this popped off the way that she wanted it to go. And incidentally, I believe that Tim's moving forward in good spirits with his case, and it's like you said, Manny, it doesn't really matter what she says or not. She was given a business card, direct drive, by Tim Miller, so she did know he was there in July. She also was sat down at a table and given a map of the whole area to where she looked at it intently, and he said to her, and I'm paraphrasing again, where do you think we should look, you know? And so for her to say twice that, well, I didn't know they was here searching for my kid. The girl watched more TV and kept up with everything, even in jail. So she knew. She knew, and she flat out lied. Now, whether that actually carries anything, see, in a civil situation, doesn't matter how much she lies. It matters what
the
jury
is,
believes
though,
and awards.
That when they call Cindy
Who's
on
talking?
The stand,
Who's talking?
Dave.
If they call Cindy on the stand, she's going to lie about it too.
We don't care about Cindy, the hot foot in this thing. It doesn't matter that she lied. The fact of the matter is, in a civil case, you don't have the same rules of procedure as you do in a criminal case. In a civil case, they can get off the chain. And if that jury believes that she's lying, and of course, guess what? They're going to believe she's lying, even if she's told the truth. He's going to get an award. That's very simple. Now, she doesn't have a job, so people say, but hey, if she ever decides to get a job or write a book or get any money or anything like this, he'll have a judgment that he can, you know, stick up somebody's ass and get his money. And I hope he does.
Okay. Manny, I just want to tell you about a message that came in a few seconds ago. One of our listeners actually has a picture supposedly, I haven't seen it, of Casey wearing a Texas EquiSearch T-shirt.
Yes, we have that picture. Yeah. We have that picture.
Sure.
Well, now let's talk about the law for a moment.
Uh-oh.
What is the contractual relationship cover between her and Texas EquiSearch?
You're in forbidden area there, my friend. I can't disclose that.
Okay. So yep. If there's some contractual relationship between them, then they have a right of cause of action. What I haven't seen, and no one's produced to this point in the conversation, is any contractual arrangement. So even I don't care how much they talk to her, they're in the business of doing that, and unless you signed a written contract, they have trouble. So if it's an oral contract, then he's going to have to set out what he believes those terms of the contract were. And again, we're down to consideration. What did she give him in terms of consideration, and what did she do?
You're definitely not versed in Florida law, I can see. In Florida law, especially is the way I understand it, and as a contractor, I call you up on the phone and say, hey, you want to do this. Any oral agreement can be enforceable within the year of his brought. Now, I don't know if he brought it timely or whatever. It's none of my concern. But oral contracts are enforceable in the state of Florida.
Well, first of all, oral contracts are enforceable everywhere. But the very nature of this particular one makes it very, very hard to enforce. And does he have a history of entering into contracts with everybody that he searches for?
Let me make it easier for you. Let me ask you a return question.
I understand what you're saying, Manny.
No, I'm not going to strike at you. I just want to return question.
Strike at me.
You've heard of, looked up, seen Mr. Miller, and you know what his organization stands for, correct?
Yeah, right.
All right. If Mr. Miller came to you, Manny, and, you know, had a cup of coffee with you and said, listen, I have spent a horrendous amount of time getting my bell rung by this crazy bitch in Florida looking for her child. You're an attorney, Mr. Manny. Would you do me a favor? I mean, would you represent Tim Miller? That's my question to you. Would you take Tim Miller on as a client and try to recover his losses? Would you
do that, Manny? No,
Why
I
not?
Wouldn't.
Why not?
Because I don't think I could win.
No.
Well, you asked me a question. I'm giving an
Manny, honest answer. Manny, could I ask you a question?
Uh-oh.
Jump in.
I think, isn't it true what you're trying to say here is that Casey may have known he was there, but there was never a contractual agreement between Casey and TES, verbal or not. There was no contract made between those two. So, therefore, why is he suing her? I guess, is that what you're trying to say?
Other than being angry and other than being right, and I totally support him in terms of being moral and ethically correct, now I got to go to, is he legally correct? And I just find it very hard to find any legal grounds. For example, she's already said she doesn't remember the conversation or the rest of it. So that puts a burden on him to prove an oral contract that she agreed to it, that it was a meeting of the minds as to what the contract would be, and be able to do it persuasively. And as a matter of course in business, he would have to prove that he entered into other similar contracts with other people, not just her. So therefore, this was his course of action, was to enter into these kind of contracts with people that he searched for. And from what I've read of him, I would be very surprised. I'm not saying he couldn't do it. I'm not saying that he doesn't have that. I'm just saying until he proves that there's some contractual relationship between them, it's very hard to find grounds for her to do it. Probably his best argument would be fraud, that she induced him to search by making fraudulent misrepresentations that caused him to waste his time because he relied upon what she said. So I see this more as a potential fraud action than I do what he's arguing. So unless he's also included the cause of action for fraud, again, I find it very difficult to find some legal grounds.
I'll let you go there, Manny, because you know what? He may very well be that. You may have touched on something that I may not be privy to say to you, but also, Manny, you're familiar with interference in an advantageous business relationship, the terminology there be. Now, if you
called tortious interference with
tortious
contract.
Well, we could add the word tortious in there, but let me ask you a question. You're working for Dave Nickel, and you're picking up newspapers that somebody has scattered all over the frickin' yard. Now, as you're gathering them up, I'm busy going to the place where you've placed them, and I'm spreading them out again somewhere else. So you got to keep on, and I'm basically causing you to have to overwork. Now, your contract's actually between Dave Nichols, I guess, your agreement to pick up these papers, but I'm continuing to put them down. And the thing, what I'm trying to say is that by her tortious interference or her tortious sending of, I guess it would go to a fraud state in that thing. And, you know, that may be the basis of the argument that we're not hearing here. But the thing of it is she did everything in her power to continue to, you know, spread the dirt around and keep everybody picking it up and putting it back down and picking it back up. And just, you know, he spent a great deal of money. Now, here's the thing. Those questions that were asked during that deposition are very, very important questions, because now she said no to all of them. But in saying no to all of them, you think outside the box for a second. Now she's roped herself off if it is proven that she did know. And if the business card, the sitting, looking at the map and all this, and seeing Tim, and when he walked in the house, I think George may have responded, "What the fuck are you doing here?" Something like that. Maybe it's a misquote. Dave has that quote a little bit better. But they knew who he was. They knew why he was there. And they ran it amok. So whether it's a tortious interference in trying to find the child, or whether it is a broken contract by oral agreement, I don't know. But we all know that she lied so damn much and cost a lot of people a lot of sleepless nights.
Well, the other part of it, yeah, not to mention if it's true she got away with murder, assuming for a moment all of this is correct. But
unintentional,
the point is, so you're going to hold, you want to, in essence, hold a criminal defendant responsible for what she says or doesn't say to people in a situation like that. I just don't think...
Oh, it's not my lawsuit. I mean, listen, me, I
no,
mean...
No, no, I'm
not... I wasn't the one
no,
out of
I'm
pocket, so I don't know. I mean, it's not my lawsuit. I mean, I would go for a little bit more power on something. Me, you know, it didn't interest me. I figure, you know, catch as catch can. I mean, when I went to Satsuma to look for the missing child, I mean, hell, I was thwarted this way, that way, set up, failed, false police reports, everything else. I've done nothing at this point because I want, when I strike, I want to make sure that I have the right culprit. And then if the fallout kicks in, great. I play a little differently. So I know what it feels like to be, you know, screwed around and pushed around and go over here, look over there and come over here and waste a lot of your time, effort, resources and things like that. Yes, I do know that. But,
welcome to the practice of law.
Here's the real question. Where did Tim Miller's TES get the money from?
From donations.
Wasn't that contributions?
Yeah,
donations.
Right, yeah.
Right.
I think, Simon, I haven't seen the face value of the lawsuit, but in knowing my friend, and surely that, you know, maybe their attorneys are listening or whatever, but if it's not upgraded, I would damn sure have it upgraded to include all these things from our wet bar here to say that, yeah, okay, EquiSearch is looking out for the donations made by people who were honorable and gave their money, time, and everything else to this cause, and this little rascal was out here, you know, shifting dirt around and caused us to, and he's not trying, I know this well enough of Tim, he's not seeking to put money in his personal bank account. He is seeking to put the money back in the coffers so that the next child, yours, mine, or whoever's comes up missing, that there'll be funding there to go and search for that. So, you know, I agree with Manny somewhat that says, you know, hey, but I also agree wholeheartedly that, hey, anybody that tries to thwart an investigation to find a missing child with volunteers out there and money being spent by people deserve to have some frickin' answers. And if they were sidelined and thwarted on that, they deserve to be recompensated, I do believe.
Right. Okay, Manny, a purely legal question. I decide to seek donations to go look for a missing puppy. And 10 people
alligator.
10 people send me $10 each. All right, so I got $100. It turns out that the whole thing is a bit of a con, that the puppy isn't missing.
Mm-hmm.
So I sue, and I want my $100 back. And sure, I mean, you know, this is a silly version of it.
Yeah, I understand where you're going. Yeah, I understand.
That's a good point, Simon.
Who gets the $100? Is it me who inherited the $100, or the people that kindly donated $10 apiece?
Well, if the 10 people want it back, give it to them. But if they gave it truly in their heart to go and look for something that was missing, hey, keep it until the next puppy comes up missing, all right? No problem. Or you can send it back. But the fact of the matter is it needs to be recompensated to somebody somewhere for something.
I'm not talking about morality or ethics. I'm talking from a legal standpoint. Manny, your comments.
Well, sympathetically, I agree with all this except for one thing. You have to have a contractual right between the parties, and I don't care what it is. And if there are areas like this that are wrong, you pass laws to correct it. But it can't be what's called ex post facto, which means enforced in their rear. So what happened is along comes, Anthony, Casey Anthony, and what does she do? She does something that horrifies the nation that nobody expects and nobody predicts, and it's wrong. But there's no real rule on the books that says it's wrong or why it's wrong, et cetera, et cetera. So guess what? She just basically has got away with something that's got to be cured as a loophole in our laws. You just can't say it's wrong, so therefore we should make her pay it back. There has to be some basis for it. I still haven't heard a legal basis for it. And believe me, I would like to see this enforced because I think it would be a nice change in the law. But
what about Zenaida Gonzalez?
Well, she's got a defamation.
Libel and Sandler, and defamation, right?
Well, her defamation. I use defamation because it was printed, so it also may turn into libel, which is really printed material versus oral. And she should win hands down, except for the fact that no one may have associated her with this if she hadn't made a big deal about it. With anyone reasonably associated with, so she's got a few hurdles to jump through. But this
Correct.
Is basically right. But we're back down to the other issue. What's the value of her damages? So there's more than one element to a cause of action, and just because you can win on one issue doesn't mean you're going to get a bundle of money. So
sure.
I don't know that her case is worth a heck of a lot. The one that's worth an awful lot to me is Richard Grund, because the fact is that
Thank
was published
you.
By the National Enquirer.
Told you I only go after the big shit, baby.
Well, no, the National Enquirer is not a criminal defendant here. They don't have any relationship with anybody.
Correct.
They're a news service, and they chose to print something that appeared to be pretty spacious and on the edge. Not the National Enquirer would ever do that, but they do.
Right.
So
right.
At the end of the day, they went
yeah.
a step farther. And well, the same holds true with everybody else, Nancy Grace, who I thought was on the edge for a long time.
Still
you
on
know,
the edge, but that's another subject, and
well,
don't
yeah,
hit nobody else with that shit.
I agree with you, but the point is that about Nancy Grace is hiding behind the
I'm
shield.
I'm going to take attorney-client privilege with you here now. Don't be revealing no shit now.
No, I'm not going to. I'm just, but Nancy Grace, seriously, it functions on that edge of how far can you go in the media before you have violated those particular rules. Well, in this case, you can go a long way because of the nature of the crime. But in
right.
the case
Be careful.
Of the National
Don't say
Enquirer,
that she has nappy hair, Manny.
Pardon me?
Don't say that she has nappy hair. You might lose your job.
Oh, my God. Dave,
well,
you're something else.
That's the great part of me not electing to work for big law firms and the rest of it, because I can
right.
pretty well say what I do want without being fired, unless, of course, my wife's really upset with me. Then I'm in trouble. Right, guys?
Well, Manny, it was like I was saying earlier, I pick and choose the ones that I know are bona fide winners. Now, that one with the National Enquirer, that's why I went out and I got my personal attorney to step up and take that by the realm. I believe in Tim's cause, but I did not offer to step forward and help Tim and his because, like you said, there's a lot of muddy water with, you know, and I love Morgan Morgan. John Morgan is a great guy, a great attorney. His firm is a great law firm. And I think he did what I would feel like doing would be to step up and try to correct some wrongs. But on the real true law side of it, as much as I would, you know, I love both. I love the Timmy's case. I love it. I'm not so uncertain that I differ too far away from Padilla's case. But the thing of it is I know the true fired winner here, and that is Richard Grunge case. That is a hands-down pay-up, and of course, we have somebody on the other side of this thing that can fork over $100 million if necessary, and if told to do so by a jury.
So you really think the National Enquirer has made that much money, huh?
It's not a question of how much did they make, but it's always a question like you lawyers, you know, and most of them are bloodsuckers, and, you know, you're probably not too far from that. It's not so much as how much you made. It's how much did you make, how much did you used to make, and how much will your future make because you have destroyed a friend's. He can't even go in. Yeah, how would you like to be sitting there in the checkout counter buying milk and bananas for breakfast and see your name all over the front of the National Enquirer that you done sacrificially killed some child, and the person beside you recognizes that to be you? You're lucky to get home with the bananas and the milk. I mean, my God, come on, man.
Well, no, why I support that, and why I believe his case is the one with the most merit. But I must warn you that if there is any truth at all to this history of sacrifices, it could cause his damages to be lower than others.
He never sacrificed anything other than his meals with his children, probably. But he never sacrificed nothing. Come on, man.
Okay, I'm looking at the clock, and it's winding down. There's something I do want to talk about because it has caused a huge amount of people going, huh, online. those darn pictures. Cobra, do you have any comments on where those darn pictures might have come from?
I know exactly where they came from. They came from the watermarkets on there. Case closed, Inc. They're my pictures. Here's the dealio. Regardless of who actually was inside and snapped the pictures, I said a long, long time ago when the 911 call went out, see, people are trapped by their prior statements. That's why I'm very careful, even though you think I'm a wild kind of guy, I'm only going to tell you some stuff in the hereafters. And I said a long time ago on a radio show when we came up with the thing that George called 911 and reported gas cans were stolen. Then he went to his next-door neighbor and said, hey, somebody stole my gas cans. At the same course in time, a few days before, a few days after it, Dave would probably know, you got her, Casey, question point, going next door to borrow a shovel from the next-door neighbor. Now, the sheds were already broke into. There's four sheds. There's huge sheds that complete with skylights and the whole nine yards and just about every yard implement and things that you would want are in those sheds. So for somebody to want to break into the shed only merely to steal a gas can, and if you notice to the left of that photograph of George standing there with that confused look on his face, I also happen to know what he said. He said, I know it was in here. I know it was in here. And we all believe, and this is our opinion, that we believe he was looking for the roll of duct tape. This picture was taken the morning after the Federal Bureau investigation boys, the FBI boys, were there and confiscated a unanimous bunch of stuff. 5-6 handwritten pages of things that they confiscated from the Anthony home. That list was given to Miss Anthony, Mama Anthony, over at the R Hotel. And about 1 o'clock in the morning, that search was complete. There were still a few folks still lingering around. The very next day, a mad dash was made back to the house, and that picture was snapped the next day when members of the family, i.e. the one in the picture there, was looking around to see what they had actually taken, because Cindy, to my knowledge, had not yet shared the list with George. He did not have the list in his hand going down the list to see what all they had recovered. And there was no reason for that girl to go get a shovel from the neighbor because she knew there was one in the shed, and the picture shows it. Now, every picture that's ever been printed out there in the press, those doors are typically closed. So this was a nice time to see that. Now, picture number two, or actually picture number two.
Before you move on,
okay.
I received a few comments that I can't see no stinking shovel in the picture.
Look harder.
No. To those people, I apologize. Obviously, I had to, downsize the resolution to make it fit on the web page. But on the left-hand side, you can most definitely make out a shovel. It's hanging on the wall. Okay.
Point up, correct. In the first photograph, I believe, I don't have the site in front of me right now, and I didn't send them to you in any specific order. I think you posted them as I sent them. But the first picture, I believe, is George in the backyard. He's crying. He's standing looking at the spot where the canine dogs had hit on that overgrown section of his yard. To the right of him is a swimming pool, and that's a spot where George would go to quite frequently and shed a few tears, rightfully so. The next photograph down, I think third one down, is the look from the inside of the Anthony house outside, showing the video surveillance that was hooked up all around the house so they could see who was sneaking up on them and all that kind of stuff. Those were never seen before photographs. Nobody even knew that they had an elaborate the camera system posted around that house, and the fact that they did, some of the other shenanigans going on wouldn't have transpired. The other photograph, the last photograph, is kind of meaningless, but I'm going to tell you something. That one probably will shake the most once it's fully, the pixels are off slightly. And that's a picture of Investigator Tim Miller's vehicle. That gentleman with his back turned towards you is none other than Dominic Casey. And Mr. Hoover, Jim Hoover's vehicle. That's Dominic Casey leaning over, getting some stuff out of Hoover's vehicle. He was asked orally, without tape recorders rolling, what exactly did Dominic Casey take from the back of that vehicle and what was he doing? Well, he came away from that vehicle with a bucket, a cell phone, a probe to press down in the ground to see if he could find the child. Now, this is the second day. He was out there the day before, but they weren't dressed properly for the snakes and the bugs and the things that would get you. So this day they came back early in the morning. I think the film is dictated about 7-something in the morning. Shows the date, time, the spot on the film where that picture was still shot, because there was a whole lot more caught. But he also said that he had a roll of duct tape. And when Dominic Casey was questioned about why you're taking a roll of duct tape out into the woods, he said, well, if we find the child, we'll have to mark the area. They were going to use duct tape to do that, which I found very odd. Now, in that photograph, you can somewhat make it out, but that photograph, the original, has been sent on to a private person to see if the pixels can be straightened out, because we thought it was very odd for the investigator who's working for Dominic Casey, who's working for Baez, is going into the woods in this particular area with a roll of frickin' duct tape. So we don't write anything into it or mean anything of it, but you just got to ask yourself, that is just some weird shit. So that's why we like that picture the best. But none of those pictures have been released to anywhere, and if they show up, hopefully they have that watermark on them, and those are my properties. Letting everybody know that's my property, man. Who said that? Dave?
I just want to ask you a quick question. On the top picture, just a quick question because I'm confused here. The top picture shows George is staring out at nothing.
No, he's staring at a spot on the ground, buddy, and he's crying.
All right, well, yeah, but it doesn't show what he's staring at. Now, wait a minute. The second picture, yeah, you can see the shovel on the wall. But
yes.
When was the picture taken?
It was taken the morning after the FBI left.
Okay, so that was after the fact. Now, when Casey went to her neighbor's house to borrow a shovel, would it be safe to say that perhaps that door was locked and she didn't break in that time, so she went and borrowed her neighbor's shovel?
Well, part of it, I tell you what I can't do. I know the answer to that question, but I can't answer that question.
Okay.
That's a good question. That's a good question.
Reasonable
I can't
question.
Answer it. Reasonable question. I can't answer it for obvious reasons. You know, there's certain questions I can answer. I can answer, you know, good question. Good question. That's all I can tell you.
Okay, folks, we're about 50 seconds from going off air. Manny, I really want to thank you for joining us, and I hope you've had fun.
Well, yes, I'm going to put down my Ringmaster whip and invite everybody back next week because I'm not sure this argument's over. So I agree
this
to continue.
This argument's never over. Cobra, it's always delightful to lock horns with you.
Hey, you never know where I'm going to show up or what I'm going to show up.
And Dave, thank you so much for taking part.
Well, thank you for inviting me.
I miss you, Dave.
Nice time.
I'm going to come to Orlando and look you up, man.
Yeah, please do. We'll go get lunch or something.
Yeah, listen, if I'm coming to Orlando, I'll do it like I did for emails,
huh?
Yeah, we ain't coming to see you. I said, if I'm coming to see you, I make up the rules, okay? I went to see Simon. I made up my own rules when I got there. And Manny, I got too much respect for you to show up like that. So we'll just have to send emails.
Well, I don't know if that I want to be spared. It sounds like a lot of fun. But you guys need to write your love letter. You write your own love letters off the screen right now. So we probably have to say goodbye to everybody.
Goodbye, brother.
We do indeed. Till next week, this is the infamous Barling and Barrett team wishing everyone a happy and healthy week, and we'll be back next Sunday. Till then, goodbye.
Bye.